I have an immigration story I'd like to share with you, and it begins in southern China with my parents. My father was one of the last of the Gold Mountain men who left China to find their fortune in Canada. The original Gold Mountain men sailed across the Pacific to build railroads in Canada and the US. When my father left for Canada, the railroads had already been built, but stories of the fortunes to be had lured many Chinese men to head towards Gold Mountain, and my father was no different. He had lived in a poor farming community, experiencing an unending drought. With just a few dollars in his pocket and two shirts he made from bed sheets, he sailed to Vancouver for a better life. A resilient man of few words, he worked his way across Canada, learning some English from kind Canadians and a few choice words from those not so nice. Eventually, he settled in Toronto and sponsored his parents to move to Canada. As with all Chinese men, he was expected to buy a house, find a wife, and start a family. My mother had left communist China with her mother to live in Hong Kong. Her father was a civil worker building roads for whichever party governed China and couldn't leave. After they departed in the middle of the night, little did they know my mother would never see her father again. As expected, my mother had to get married before it was too late. My mother was one of three eligible brides presented to my father. With her photo in his hand, he flew to Hong Kong, met my mother, got married, then flew back to Toronto to begin the immigration process. It would be another 2 years before they could live as husband and wife. My parents were lucky that they lived near a large Chinese community and found comfort in finding familiar foods and having conversations with shopkeepers and neighbors about the old country. But life wasn't easy. Language would be a lifelong challenge, and they relied on friends who knew little more than they to help translate. It was then my obligation as daughter number one to be the family translator. My inaugural attempt was to help my father fill out unemployment forms when he lost his job. I was six at the time. Money was always tight, and they worked hard trying to make ends meet, and somehow they managed to keep a growing family of four and then five clothed and fed on less than poverty wages. My father silently poured his soul into work. 6 days a week, he worked away from home, and on the seventh day, he fixed things around the house. Besides caring for us, my mother brought home piecework and sewed into the wee hours to make extra cash. We even sacrificed all our privacy when my parents rented out all the bedrooms in the house to tenants and keeping only a living room and dining room as our private space. It was only later in my life that I saw the hardships in their faces and heard the weariness in their voices. And sometimes I catch glimpses of my mother sobbing with loneliness, wishing she had her extended family nearby to help take some of the burden away. It wasn't all hard and sad. I had very fond memories, too. My mother told me stories of her past. She and her friends stealing mangoes in a neighbor's yard, watching street operas after work, killing her first and only chicken, and my grandmother's heroic battle with a cobra. She told me of her first experience with snow while stepping off the plane at Pearson International Airport and marveling at the towering buildings surrounding her new home. Leaving for Canada was new and different. It was exciting and scary. As she settled into motherhood, I remembered my feisty mother arguing with the school principal in her broken English that school cannot close on snow days. I saw her march behind the counter at the butcher's, making sure the fresh chicken for New Year was not overweight. She patiently showed me how to wrap sticky rice in banana leaves and reluctantly emptied the cartons of milk into bowls so my brother could make boats from the empties. Before my mother died, she had a chance to return to Hong Kong and her village in China. Things were very different. Her old home was gone. The village had morphed into a modern city. As she was led by her cousins through the unfamiliar streets, my mother felt like she did when she first arrived in Canada. Everything was new and different. It was exciting and scary. But this time, the scary was not the unknown future in the new land. The scary was seeing her past disappear. My wise mother accepted this and realized her home was in Canada as she looked around her house filled with memories of tears and laughter. She cherished these stories, and I'm grateful she shared them with me. Now, after my immigration from Canada to the US, I continue to remember and honor my parents' lives and our hardships and sacrifices growing up by telling these stories to my new family and friends.
Eric. Good morning. In my 20s, my quest for happiness led me often to wonder about greener pastures. I was extremely shy, a character trait that was limiting me very much. Job in customer service helped a little bit. Then I got involved in hot air ballooning, first on the sidelines, but eventually I felt ready to try it myself, got my own balloon and pilot's license, much to the surprise of my family. Leadership skills and confidence came with it, and it changed my mindset a little bit. But I wanted more out of life. So I threw what was familiar overboard, and after 35 years in the Netherlands, I decided to move to the United States, get married to somebody I did not know all that well, and start a family. Did I think this all the way through? No, I did not. Did I realize what it would mean to the relationships I had with my family and friends? No, I did not. Did I have any idea how I would live, what opportunities there were for me here, over here? No, I did not. But in June of 1995, I packed up my cherished belongings, shipped them overseas, and boarded a plane to Chicago. Now, entering the United States with the intention to get married means surrendering your passport. It's much easier to come here on vacation, get married to a US citizen within 3 months, and apply for legal residence status. Now, where I'm from, people are known to be frugal. So why buy a round-trip ticket if you're not planning on coming back? Even if you're only pretending to come to the United States on vacation. So that mistake almost cost me dearly. I was pulled aside at O'Hare Airport and questioned. I stated that I was going to travel around the country, did not know exactly when and where I would leave from, but that was not convincing enough. I finally showed him the official invitation to be a judge at the World Championships hot air ballooning the following week in Battle Creek, Michigan. That got me through. With a big sigh of relief, I went to retrieve my luggage containing two pairs of downhill skis that did not quite fit in the crates that I built and shipped overseas by boat. It was a hot summer day, 95 degrees outside. If they would have only known. Arriving here felt strange at first, of course. I've been to some national parks out west, but not anywhere around here. And being on vacation is quite different anyway from settling somewhere to live. Having a decent command of the English language and an open mindset made me adapt rather quickly to my new small-town community. Within a few days, I was working the counter of our store in Pecatonica, and soon I became known by the locals as the balloon guy. After getting married, I filed the immigration paperwork and paid the fees. The person I spoke to in Chicago at the immigration office was courteous and friendly. That may have been the luck of the draw, but it helped. It was a slow process, and it took about 4 years to get the actual green card that made me an official legal resident alien. But within 6 months after arriving, I did get a Social Security card, and I was allowed to work in the United States. That's when the challenge started. With an education in business administration and economics, and 12 years of experience in finance and accounting in the Netherlands, I was hoping to find at least something in that field around here. Unfortunately, no applications resulted in any interviews. So I ended up working in a factory through a temp agency, low wages, no benefits. When my son Alex was born in 1997, the reality of not having health insurance became very clear. The out-of-pocket expenses for the birth added up to $14,000, and the bill was presented in such a casual fashion as if I was just kind of able to write a check for that amount and get it over with. Welcome to the United States. Let us set you back a bit. So all I could do was continue to work hard. I got a job as an accounting clerk at a local cutting tool distributor. The pay was still low, and the commute was long, but there were benefits. So after a full day's work in the office, I would work the night shift in our store or do balloon rides with passengers to make some extra money. In 2002, I was hired by my current employer and within 4 months became the manager of the department. But it still took many years to reach the same level of pay that I had back in the Netherlands. Did not feel like the American dream to me. As for the reason of moving here, my marriage, well, that ended, but I will not elaborate on that since it's personal. But let's just say I've had my share of grief and disappointments. So what do I like about the United States? I like to have space, not only the vast outdoors, but a house with a room for a guest or two, a yard, place to park your car. That was a treat. I was used to pretty tight quarters in the Netherlands, so it's nice to have a little bit more space, especially when you're 6'5" like me. People here are friendly, so it's easy to talk to everybody and make friends. What do I dislike? Deceptive sales practices. There seem to be an abundance of that over here. Do people really think that we fall for the same spiel every time? I guess enough people are gullible enough, and bending the truth in marketing seems perfectly accepted. But is there any advertising you can still believe and trust? What do I miss? Of course, I miss my family and the friends that I had in school growing up. I miss the ability to be in an entirely different country and culture in a matter of hours. I miss the feeling of a local market on Saturday morning, or sharing a cup of coffee or a drink with a friend on a terrace of a local cafe. It's hard to describe, but maybe some of those of you who have been to Europe can relate to it. There's a word in my language that describes the feeling, gezelligheid. There's no translation for it. Would I have done things differently if I could do it all over again? Yeah, I certainly would. But then again, I believe in fate. And fate brought me here. Without it, I wouldn't be a member of this church and being among all you wonderful people. Without it, I wouldn't have met my lovely wife, Mary Ellis, to whom I was married at this exact spot in June of this year. I'm grateful for a lot of things, and I hope to enjoy them for many years to come. Now, since we have such a diverse society, it would help if Americans could acquire some more knowledge about the rest of the world. Geography, history, things like that. Now, of course, this UU congregation is much more educated than most, but I've heard a few times, oh, Holland, is that the same as Denmark? No! Or is it like part of Germany? No, but we could have been, so thanks for liberating us in 1945. So here's a mini lesson in where I'm from. The name of the country is Nederland, or in English, the Netherlands. About a quarter of the country is below sea level, hence the name. Holland is only part of the country. The city of Amsterdam is in the province of Northern Holland, and The Hague and Rotterdam are in Southern Holland. There are 12 provinces altogether, one of them entirely reclaimed from the sea. The country is less than one-third the size of Illinois, but the population is over 17 million people. The term Dutch comes from the German word Deutsch and was originally used to describe people from the lowlands, indicating both Germany and the Netherlands. As the borders changed, the term Dutch remained in the United States, but the use of it's not quite accurate anymore. The country is rich in culture and history. Agriculture, transportation, and oil are big economy drivers. Currency is the euro. Major sports are soccer and speed skating. And to conclude on the subject of sports, could the USA please stop calling sporting events world championships if you invite no other countries? Thank you.
Thank you. Shuk?
Good morning. Many years ago in post-war Japan, my mother told me, "Shoko, America is an amazing country. Maybe because of its size and young history, it has almost magical power to embrace and then absorb a lot of people with different cultures." And she encouraged me to study English hard. So, going to America someday became my youthful dream. In 1966, it came to reality thanks to the invitation by exchange teacher from Seattle to my hometown, Kobe. Now, half a century later in post-election America, I wonder what I will tell my late mother about my country. "Mother, you are right. America is an amazing country, beautiful, diverse, complicated, and much more complicated. The magical power you imagine so optimistically is hard to function in this multi-layered and multiracial America. My life as an immigrant turned out to be a long and wide journey, literally. I lived in six different states, west, east, middle, north, and south, with my husband, an engineer, a fellow immigrant from China. Let me share two of my most significant experiences along the way. Some while ago, in a small town in Indiana, I encountered evangelicals for the first time. It was a profound shock to realize a chasm between my abstract idea of religion and their urgent, living, breathing faith of Christianity. More recently, in Houston, Texas, I was thrilled to become a flight attendant. That was my dream job growing up in Japan. In spite of my height and age, no discrimination there. We say only in America. It was a wonderful opportunity to see the world but sobering side of America at the same time. Deep-seated racial discrimination. I flew with many minority crews, Black, Spanish, LGBTQ members, and some of their stories they shared with me were eye-opening and heartbreaking. I received some slights here and there, but nothing overt. Until one day on one trip, I stood up to the white pilots during heated conversation about Iraq wars. And then he said, he uttered the worn out ugly slogan, "Go back the way you came from." Now I'm retired and settled down here with my husband and family nearby, but I know my journey is not over yet because you, your church, my church, will keep on urging me to grow yet. This is what I will tell my mother. Thank you.
Martha?
I'm glad I married somebody that was 6'5", because my kids aren't as short as I am, but. My father was born in Coleman, Texas, and my mother was born in Southern California. They met in Zacapu, Michoacán, in central Mexico, and that's where I was born, along with my older brother, John. In 1953, my mother gave my father money to go to Mexico City and buy her an electric sewing machine. She was a seamstress in our hometown. He went, instead of going directly to Mexico City and buying that sewing machine and coming back to Zacapu with it, he took the money, went to Laredo, went to the train station and asked, "How far north will this get me?" Rockford, Illinois. We've always blamed my mother for not wanting the next better sewing machine. We could have been in Madison. But then again, here we are. In 1955, my father sent for his family. And it was December of 1955. And my father, my grandfather took us as far as the border, and my father met us there and brought us to Rockford. I remember so vividly, I was 5 years old. I don't know, that's me. That was, you know, how can you not welcome this, right? I remember getting out of the car and there was snow on the ground. And I was shocked when I went into it rather than being able to walk on top of it, you know? I mean, this, I thought it was solid. It was terrible. I didn't like it. I was away from my grandparents. I was away from my cousins, my aunts, my uncles. I was away from that structure that I was so comfortable with, all the support that I had in Zacapu, and here I was in Rockford, Illinois, in this small little trailer that my father lived in. And every time he would go to work, my brother and I would say to my mother, "He's gone, let's go home." It was a hard adjustment. We didn't have a Spanish-speaking community that was strong in where we lived. My brother went to school right away, but I didn't. And that following fall, I went to school, and there was a little girl that was in our community that took me under her wing. Of course, you know, looking like that, you know, why not? And she started teaching me English. Her name was Diana, and I'll always remember that, because further down in my life, when I was 13, my younger sister was born. And my father said, Martha, you name her. And I said to him, Diana. Well, by the time he got to the hospital, it was Donna. But going to school for the first time in a place where you don't know the language well enough to really communicate or even count to 10 was difficult. But again, you know, the fate, and you're talking, and the people that came before me are talking about having faith in where we are and what we're doing. And my first grade teacher was from the Philippines, and she spoke Spanish. And there wasn't a bilingual program, by the way, in 1956. She would gather me up, put me on her lap at story hour, and point to the words as she was giving the lessons. Having that kind of nurturing is what gave me hope that things were going to get better. Making friends in this little bitty school. I went to school the school's name was Harry Morris School. It was on Ogilby Road, and it was a four-room schoolhouse. So everybody was very close. Everybody knew everybody, and everybody watched out for me because I was this little bitty girl who didn't know the language and didn't know what a hot dog was and was just shocked at the fact that some of the things that we were eating, to actually have a sandwich instead of a taco. Whenever we wanted to go and buy some of the food that we were familiar with, we would have to go to Chicago. There wasn't anything here in Rockford. So my mother had to really make do. I remember when we first got here, my mother wanted to go to Mass, and she didn't know where the church was. We ended up at the Poor Clares on South Main Street. And we went in, and we went to Mass. And it wasn't until several times of going to the Poor Clares for Mass that they finally told us that we should go to St. Anthony's or, St. Mary's. And it took a while to become accustomed to all of the different changes. My mother never learned English. We were always the ones that had to go with her to translate. And many years later, I said to her, Mom, why don't you learn English? And she looked at me and she said, because I'm just here visiting. So now she's going to be 96, and she's still here visiting. So, but as a child, coming to a new place, I think is much more difficult because you're leaving everything that was secure, everything that you know, and trying really hard to not only learn the language, but learn the culture, the differences in how everyone acts and expects and et cetera. So it was very, very difficult. But here I am. I have a wonderful family, and I'm very glad that my parents made that decision to come to the United States and be with all of you. Thank you.